Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
It is 10 after 5. Good morning. This is good news, I hope, for you, too. If you are up at this hour every day, I think I've found the secret to feeling good when you wake up. Okay, follow along here. So Sunday night, I'm up late watching the Grammys, and then, of course, watching all of the Kobe Bryant news coverage. Got to bed too late, only slept for about, and then I had a restless night. I only slept for about, I don't know, maybe 5 hours at the most, if that. So last night, I got like 6 hours sleep. That's not a lot, right? But I got up before the alarm this morning because I felt so good compared to how I felt at this time yesterday. So
baby steps.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, just, you know, suck it up some night and go to bed late, get up and feel really bad, and then you'll feel good the next day. So I guess on that schedule, you would feel good every other day, right? I haven't perfected this yet, but I think I'm on to something.
I think I get where you're going with this, but you have to pay a price to do it.
There is a price you pay, that it usually comes about 5 days later when you can't sleep at all or you wake up in the middle of the night about five or six times. There is a price, and yeah, it's a hard one.
Well, like I said, I'm still working on this, but this morning I get up like, you know, 5 minutes before the alarm, and I'm thinking, wow, I feel pretty good here. What's going on? And then I put two and two together. But sometimes when you put two and two together at 3:30 in the morning, you end up with five, not four. So
you're thinking too much, Bob. Every day is different when you do this.
I am thinking too
every
much.
Every night,
Mary,
is different.
You're right about that.
You
yeah.
never know. It's weird.
It's an adventure, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
You don't have a dog, do you?
No, I don't.
See, the dog wanted to go out this morning at 2:40.
Oh,
and
Dave.
So I let what?
Why?
Well, the dog had to go, so I'd rather he let us know. But so I let him out and got back into bed. Of course, I'm not going back to sleep. At that point, I have half an hour. I tried to close my eyes. I was wide awake.
Yeah, if you walk the dog in the morning, that's a whole other set of problems,
yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's me. I walk my dog at about 3:30 in the morning.
I had a cat growing up all the time because we lived in apartments, but I love dogs too, but I always had cats. And so.
And they stay up all night, don't they?
Cats. They're hunters. Yeah, they're hunters. So, yeah, they sleep during the day. And I love cats. I never understood people who don't get cats or think that they are not affectionate. I had a cat once that would walk with me outside, just like a dog. You know, I would walk, the cat would be next to me and stop when I stopped. And the cat would also fetch like a dog.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a little odd.
You're sure it was a cat.
You know, I think they're smarter than dogs. I mean, people say, well, the cat won't do this, won't do that. Well, won't drink water out of the toilet. Yeah, right. Well, think about that. Who's smarter, the dog or the cat? 5-5-13 right now.
They still scare me. Sorry, Bob.
Yeah. Well, Mary's in the traffic center. She'll report on the traffic that may scare you today.
Not any cat stories. Thank you.
Dave is on the sports desk and in the newsroom. Here's Steve. Good to have you with us on this Tuesday, January 28th. I'm Bob Surratt. And here comes Nancy Liu from WGN-TV talking about the story she's reporting on today. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning, Bob. We are again, following along with the impeachment trial in Washington, and this will be day two of the president's attorneys with their opening arguments. And yesterday, they went all day arguing against the entire impeachment process. That they're accusing the House of it being all partisan politics. And you know, his attorneys they're insisting that aid to Ukraine was temporarily withheld, but that was for good reason, because there's a history of corruption in Ukraine. And, you know, the president has denied that it was ever tied to an investigation of the Bidens. Of course, Vice President Biden and his son Hunter, who worked for an energy firm in Ukraine. So today, the president's attorneys will be back at it, attacking these two articles, which again are abuse of power as well as obstruction of Congress. Now, the big elephant in the room yesterday was the John Bolton book. It's coming out in March. But everybody's heard about the manuscript, that it's out there, and the revelation that the former National Security Advisor, Bolton, he has firsthand knowledge, and he confirms what the House has been contending, that aid to Ukraine, that there was quid pro quo for an investigation of the Bidens. Are you keeping track of all this? Who's on first?
I'm trying. I know that John Bolton has told lawmakers he's willing to testify at the trial, yeah. But it's not likely to happen, is it?
Well, they're going to maybe hold a vote later this week. I mean, that will have to follow, the defense opening. After the defense wraps today, there's going to be an open 16 hours. It's allotted for senators to ask questions. So that witness potential vote wouldn't happen until after that question and answer session for both sides. That could go 16 hours. So that could stretch a couple days. So I don't think a witness vote might happen until Thursday at the earliest, and probably Friday.
And we'll see if there are any other surprises. I guess the only people who saw this Bolton manuscript ahead of time would have been the NSA, the National Security Administration, has to clear the material in books like that. They have to vet it. But other than the NSA, this came as a surprise. So we'll see what happens with that.
As you've heard, excerpts of the book were released to the New York Times, and that's been making the rounds. So it certainly remains to be seen, whether Bolton testifies. He's indicating that he wants to. It just remains to be seen whether he'll be allowed to.
The Room Where It Happened, that's the John Bolton book coming out.
Exactly.
Nancy Liu, Channel 9. Thank you, Nancy. Have a good day.
You're so welcome. You do the same.
312-981-7200. That's the phone number here. Giving a phone number I gave out in 1973. 312-981-7200 is our number. That's also the text number. And if you want to email us here, bobshow@wgnradio.com. And about this time every day, we say hello to our first caller who gets on the radio and award a prize. Ed in Palatine, that's you today. Hi there.
All right, man, I'm here.
I know you are. I'm here, and you win.
I've been listening to you for a long time, man.
You must be very tired. What do you do, Ed?
I'm a truck driver. I was with the Teamsters.
Good for you. Are you on the road yet today?
No, I'm retired.
Ah, well, you're my idol.
Around downtown Palatine.
And how long were you working, and who were you working for when you were driving?
I drove like 30 years with Teamsters, and did mostly the movies downtown in Chicago. Drove a truck on the movies.
Well, that must have been fun. You have any good celebrity stories to share with us?
Oh, yeah, there was always good ones. Always. They're all good. Blues Brothers was exceptional.
Oh, really? You worked on the Belushi Aykroyd movie?
Oh, yeah. Very, it was an era.
Yeah, those were great days. Well, you know what used to be? People said, hey, you want to know where to eat? Go where the truck drivers go. You want to drive carefully and safely? Just watch how those guys do it. I don't know if that's still true, but it was when you were working, I'm sure, Ed.
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely, man. Definitely.
Okay, let me get you a prize here that I think you'll enjoy since you have time to see if the sun ever comes out. We'll give you a desktop indoor weather station. Brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. We'll get that out to you as your reward for being up listening to us and being the first caller on the radio, Ed.
All right, Bob. Thanks a lot, man.
Okay, thank you. You hold on. We'll get all the necessary information to take care of you. Coming up on 524. One thing we'll be keeping our eye on today, and I know in the newsroom, Steve is going to be doing that, the stock market, which, let's see, the Dow was down like 453 points yesterday. The NASDAQ closed down 175. Any indications, Steve, of what's going to happen this morning? The futures looking okay?
Yeah, futures are up, but not anywhere near where the losses were from yesterday, Bob. Dow futures are up about 66 points this morning. We're seeing a little bit of a gain, too, for the NASDAQ and S&P 500. But there's a long way to go to claw back to that 453-point level. And if Asia is the any indication, the Nikkei in Japan lost about 0.5% of its value this morning, down nearly 127 points. So more losses likely today, but not as bad as yesterday. The big companies that are getting hit are all of these tourism and travel companies and airlines like United and the cruise companies that rely on this Chinese tourism for the new year that people are not being able to do that this year.
It's all about the coronavirus,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I always forget, Chicago time, the New York Stock Exchange opens at 7:30?
8:30.
8:30 Chicago time.
Right.
All right. Well, that'll be interesting. We'll follow that for you today. And I heard Robbie Gold, Dave, on TV and on the radio talking about the Super Bowl and and how he still loves Chicago, and he's heard from a lot of Chicago fans. And this is something for that guy. This is Super Bowl number two for him, and he's been in the league, what, 15 years?
Yeah. But he was with the Bears when they played in Miami in 2007 after the 06 season when they lost to Peyton Manning and the Colts, so he gets a chance to go back. And, of course, this time last year, everybody was thinking he might end up back with the Bears. He stayed with the 49ers. Turns out it was a good decision by him.
Yes, I'll say.
But he still lives here, and he still said he's making Chicago his family's permanent home.
Right. And I'm very upset that the Cubs didn't re-sign Castellanos. And not only that, but he's going to be in their division
because
he signed with the Reds.
Yeah, I mean, he had a great second half after the Cubs picked him up at the trade deadline. And if you remember, like, his first week with the Cubs was unbelievable.
Well, every time he was up, he was hitting a double, and apparently he was great in the clubhouse, and he was good in the field. There was some talk for a while that the Sox were looking at him for right field.
There was for a while, but they're set in their outfield. They were able to, not only do they have Mirazi coming in, they've got, of course, Eloy, they've got Luis Robert ready to go, they think. So, yeah, they were okay there. The Cubs, you know, if you look at them, that's an area where you've got some questions, certainly.
And
he was a big, and he gave him a pretty consistent bat last year, too, in the second half of the season when there weren't a lot of guys hitting consistently, so.
He was the best player on the team for that last part of the season.
It's a gamble. There's no question letting a guy like that go, and especially the fact he ends up in your division. And Cincinnati's been very active this offseason. They've made a lot of moves. So this division didn't get any easier over the winter.
It's going to be tough. And I see where the NBA postponed the Lakers' next game, which was supposed to be tonight against the Clippers,
yep.
Right? Yeah, and they, you knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, right? I think that's perfectly understandable. They're not going to play now until Friday, so they get a couple days to mourn and to they brought in grief counselors for the players and for the employees of the team yesterday. So,
and I know the Bulls saluted Kobe last night, and then they won, didn't they?
They did win. They won. They beat the Spurs 110-109. The Spurs had to go through this twice in 2 days because they played on Sunday. They were, I think, one of the first teams to play after the word came that Kobe had been killed, and they played on Sunday. They turned around. They did not only did the Bulls have 24 second moment of silence at the beginning of the night, they showed a very nice video tribute at the United Center, and then they each took the Bulls took an 8 second violation, and the Spurs took a 24 second violation to start the game.
And Jim Boylan was pretty choked up,
shoot around. Yeah, he was pretty emotional. I think it's hit a lot of people very hard, and I think. Not just in the sports world, but just watching like some of the entertainment shows last night, people are really broken up. I know you have some sound at Jimmy Kimmel we're going to hear later. So.
Yeah, Jimmy Fallon as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, well, Kimmel does a show there in Hollywood, so he devoted the whole show to Kobe Bryant. Oregon has the agribusiness news now at 5:38.
Good morning. Yesterday, again, coronavirus dominating the markets from Wall Street to Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange. Cattle and hog contracts fell their daily trading limits yesterday, hitting multi-month lows on fears that the spread of a coronavirus in China would continue to impact the markets. At the end of the day, the April lean hog contract down $2.50 a hundredweight and the May lean hog contract down $3. Live cattle, February cattle down $2.45. April cattle down $3 a hundredweight. And it didn't stop at livestock. It was in the grain market as well, as we saw again, prices, well, they closed above their session lows as some bargain buyers stepped in to the market after soybeans hit their lowest level since December 12. At the end of the day yesterday, the March soybean contract down 4.5 cents a bushel, March corn down 6.75, and March wheat down just 0.5 cent a bushel. My guess is today we'll see some bargain buyers coming into the marketplace in the stock market and also in the commodity markets. The Illinois Wheat Association and the Illinois Soybean Association checkoff program continues to join forces, and they're going to co-sponsor the Illinois Double Crop Farmers Forum. That comes up Thursday. It's at the Doubletree by Hilton in Mount Vernon, Illinois. The session starting at 9 o'clock and going into the afternoon. Subject, double crop. The Double Crop Farmers Forum. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Remind me when we talk to Orion live. When do we do that? Thursday, I think, right? When we chat with him to ask him about that cosmic apple I found that I'm liking. And also the fake fish that's now being produced. The impossible fish. I'm sure Orion will have a few things to say about that. So remind me to ask him about that. It is Thursday, right, that we have him live? They're listening to another show in the control room right now. Joe, Vivian, Thursday we talk to Orion live, is that right?
No, we talk to him on Wednesdays.
Oh, Wednesday. Sorry. Oh, tomorrow. Okay. All right, good. Sorry to wake you. 5:41. So when are we going to see the sun around here? I mean, have you heard these numbers? It's crazy. Let's see. Yesterday was the fifth straight day with no sun. Longest sunless streak since last February. Usually in January, you get sunshine 42% of the time. We, this month, have seen the sun like 28% of the time. And the forecast is kind of funny, really. Cloudy skies linger today. Overcast tonight, continued cloudy tomorrow, mostly cloudy Thursday, mostly cloudy Friday, mostly cloudy Saturday, mostly cloudy Sunday. And they were talking about some snow maybe over the weekend. Of course, minor accumulation possible Saturday, they say now. Till then, a few stray flurries here and there, maybe a raindrop or two, but basically not much change and temperatures in the 30s. At least it's not real cold. That's good. It's 5:41 right now. Coming up later this morning, we'll talk with a sleep expert about snoring and the possibility that a pineapple plant could prevent snoring. So you want to check that out. Yeah.
You yeah. put that in somebody's nose or how does that?
I don't know.
We'll find out when the doctor arrives at about 7:40 this morning.
Kind of scratchy, wouldn't it?
And then if you can't be with us then, they load up the show online and you can listen to it later on a podcast, right? How do you do that? You go to WGNradio.com. Is that what you do?
You can do that. Yes.
Because sometimes when we talk about things we're going to do in the morning, people can't call in and say, I'm not coming to work today. I have to stay home and listen. I have to sit in my car all day and listen. So you can just check out the podcast later and do that, WGNradio.com. A couple of restaurants in the news, and not in a good way. Baker's Square filing for bankruptcy, and the owner of Baker Square and Village Inn has filed and closed 33 locations, blaming high wages and growing competition for declining sales and higher operating losses. And then Bar Louie filing for bankruptcy, the Texas-based gastropub chain, was founded in Chicago 30 years ago. They filed Chapter 11 and closed more than a third of their corporate-owned locations, including several in the Chicago area. Restaurants in Naperville and the near north side of Chicago, among 38 corporate-owned locations that were closed over the weekend due to accelerating sales declines. The chain, which had grown to 134 locations in 26 states, cites recent expansion and inconsistent brand experience, which I guess is another way of saying they couldn't really control what was happening at their restaurants, and decreased traffic to shopping malls as leading to the declines. An Oak Brook location of Bar Louie closed in March. More than a dozen Chicago area locations do remain open for now. I didn't realize that Bar Louie started in Chicago on the near north side back in 1990.
I didn't know that. I always liked them.
Good place, yeah.
Well, and when I would work, I'm sure you can relate to this, when I worked television or worked late at night, the kitchen stayed open there.
Yeah.
And so it was a place I could stop and grab something to eat late at night, knowing that there was probably nothing at home and no other place really to go. Same with, really, with Baker Square. Those places, I haven't seen one in a long time. A lot of them have closed, I thought.
Yeah.
And where's the competition? I mean, I don't know any other major pie places, too.
No.
Yeah.
They said they were hurting because of competition. I'm like, well, with who?
I don't know. That section of the restaurant business has been having problems. You talk about places that stay open late, and this was really bad working downtown late at night, and I'd always drive past Due's. And I don't know if Uno stayed open as late, but I remember back in the day, I don't know if they still do, they were up until like 2 in the morning or something. So there was all, you drive by, Should I? Can I keep going? I got to get some pizza. So that was a bad temptation.
I'm going to miss the French soap pie if that closed completely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, actually, that was everybody's favorite, wasn't it? Yeah. Let's see. We've got some good news in the Sun-Times. Franz Spielman reporting a Pullman industrial parcel, once touted as the site of a Chicago casino, would instead house an Amazon distribution center. But only if the 150,000-square-foot warehouse can be up and running by October 31st. Alderman Anthony Beal said that would require Mayor Lightfoot's administration to expedite building permits and put a Class 6B property tax break on a fast track toward city council approval. According to Beal, Amazon needs only that to start building a 40-acre distribution center at 104th and Woodlawn at a site once owned by Ryerson Steel. No tax increment, financing, subsidy, or other city assistance is required. And real estate news, This morning, a River North developer has hired a firm to market office space in a new tower proposed for the southwest corner of Illinois and Dearborn. A sign that a project city officials approved in 2018 is moving forward. Albert Friedman plans to build a 29-story building at 450 North Dearborn. It would replace the headquarters of the Chicago Fire Department's Engine Company 42, but would incorporate a new firehouse immediately west of the current one. Property brokerage Cushman & Wakefield was hired to market the new building's 620,000 square feet of offices. It will also have more than 50,000 square feet for retail and restaurant use. And apparently, construction is supposed to start later this year. The targeted opening date, mid-2023. That's at 450 North Dearborn. Albert Friedman behind that project. I know Albert a little bit. Really good guy. And let me tell you something. Albert, and I could be wrong about this, but I don't think so. He bought real estate in River North. He bought the entire River North neighborhood, basically, some years ago. Now, I remember that neighborhood when I was a kid because I worked in the merchandise mart when NBC was there, and I was a page. And one of my jobs was to walk from the merchandise mart downstairs to buy newspapers, to get the newspapers for the newsroom. And you couldn't even buy a newspaper anywhere around River North. There was nothing there. It was warehouses, industrial buildings. So I had to walk from the merchandise mart to, like, State Street to get newspapers and then schlep them back to the newsroom at NBC. And there was nothing in the entire River North area around the merchandise mart. And now look what happened.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Why couldn't I have thought of that? I mean, I'm down there as a kid. I'm seeing the neighborhood there. Why wasn't I thinking like Albert Friedman? I know. I'll get some money together and buy something. It wasn't that expensive to buy property in River North back then. I'm talking about now when I was at NBC. What years would that have been? That would have been like 66, 67, 68, right around there.
Well, you know where else? Streeterville.
No, yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely nothing there. And now it's a whole new neighborhood, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, what else could we have done so that we wouldn't be up at this hour?
Well, let's see. Where we are right now, the Lakefront East, you have all these new glimmering high-rises right around us. But there, I remember when there was a driving range here.
Yeah, not too long ago. Not too many years ago. We're at 303 East Wacker here in the Bob Surratt building. And, yeah, this whole area east of Michigan Avenue was pretty much deserted except for a couple of projects, right? Yeah.
This is getting depressing.
Sorry.
Yeah, add to the list investing in Apple or Amazon about 20 years ago when they first opened.
And Google.
Start with that. Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. Good morning. It's 5:54 right now. We'll get to some extremely local news and get into the neighborhoods and tell you what's going on. We are visited by representatives from Block Club Chicago every morning, and this morning at about 7:20 or so, the director of strategy and the co-founder of Block Club Chicago, Jen Sabella, will be here to share what we call extremely local news and get into the areas of the city that normally, you know, you don't hear on newscasts. So that's coming up today. And then our social media expert is with us later this morning after 8 o'clock. Right after we talk to Dean Richards about entertainment, we'll get Scott Kleinberg on the line. And he always has some interesting things to say and interesting advice for us and for businesses as far as social media, Facebook, Twitter, and so forth and so on. By the way, I should give out that Twitter address once in a while, right? At Bob Surratt. Okay? And then the phone number here and the text number is 312-981-7200. Email bobshow@wgnradio.com. Did I leave anything out? Oh, I have to tell you what happened to me on the way home after the 6 o'clock news. I'll tell you, I don't know why these things have to happen to me, but I had a little incident involving a pebble on the expressway hitting my windshield. So we'll go over that. It's like a It's like a minefield out there. Trucks are kicking up all kind of, not just trucks, but there's all sorts of debris you have to get through now. And I don't know if this ever happened to you, but I may need your help on that. So that's coming up after our 6 o'clock news. For now, let's check the markets. And Steve's got that in the newsroom.
Markets struggling this morning, Bob, to try to gain some ground after a rough day yesterday. And there are quite a few things that could move the markets one way or the other today on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook. The first on the list today is consumer confidence numbers, U.S. consumer confidence. The S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller Home Price Index. We'll also get a report on durable goods orders. The Federal Open Market Committee, the Federal Reserve, begins a two-day meeting today. Wrapping up tomorrow, there is no expectation of a rate cut or a rate hike at this meeting. Also, the Richmond Fed Manufacturing Index. And lots of companies reporting quarterly earnings today, including 3M, Apple, Harley-Davidson, Lockheed Martin, Pfizer, Xerox, eBay, and Starbucks. So lots of things on the list that could move the markets on this Tuesday, January the 28th.
Thank you, Steve. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. How you doing? It's 10 after 6. So I'm driving home yesterday, and I hear this little noise coming from the windshield area, and I look, and there is a little crack, a little round sort of crack in the glass. It's like an obstacle course out there on the road. So some stone, I guess, hit the windshield. And now I'm thinking, okay, is this going to, you know how it spreads? Has this ever happened to you? You get a little nick in the windshield, and then all of a sudden there's a long line across your windshield.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Especially driving the Eisenhower every day.
I mean, there's stuff flying everywhere. So I go to my auto shop, and I talk to the guy, and he looks at it, and he says, well, you know, I don't know that we can fix this. It's probably going to end up, you know, showing a long crack across the windshield. And to replace the windshield, it's about $1,500. So,
ooh, boy, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Did you call your insurance company?
I did. So I called the insurance company, and they say there's a $250 deductible on your comprehensive. But if they can repair the windshield, if they can repair it, no deductible. So, and then I said to the guy I was talking to, who apparently this happens so much, the insurance companies have special departments that just take care of windshields.
They come to your house. They just came to our house last week to put our new things.
Right, they do that. Yeah. Or you can go to, like I said, well, I've been going to the same place for years. I'd like to go here. And they said, okay, that's fine. But I don't know what to do now, because the guy I was talking to said, you know, sometimes it won't spread across your windshield, because it's down low in the middle of the windshield. It's not like I have to look through it. So I can live with this thing, especially if it's going to cost me, you know, a $250 deductible. But I don't know what to do. Do I just wait? Because the guy at my car place said, I don't think we can fix this. I think you're going to need to replace the windshield. So I don't know what to do now.
Well, I have a question. So when it fails, is it going to shatter and fly in on you, or
no,
is it just going to crack?
No, it's just going to crack. I'll be driving with a line across the windshield.
Well,
at least that's what I'm told.
So you'll either pay the deductible now, or you'll pay it later, basically.
Yeah, so I'm going to, I guess I can just wait, right?
Okay.
I don't know.
Let's take a vote.
It's so easy. They just come to your house, literally. They, you know, and they replace the whole window. It takes like 15 minutes.
Well, but how much does it cost? I know it's easy to do.
It's happened to us so many times. We've already paid our deductible. So, yeah, my husband takes care of it.
I wasn't following a big truck. As far as I can remember, there was no vehicle in front of me. And I don't know where this stone came from, but actually, if you look closely, there's two little, tiny little holes. So the guy at my service place, he put a piece of tape on it, and he said, well, this will prevent moisture from getting in there. So, and then
Did you say there's two, Bob?
Two little bitty, bitty ones.
I think you need to get it done, Bob. Sorry.
Why does this have to happen to me?
Good morning. Well, good morning, everyone.
Now the top six at six with Bob Saras on WGN Radio.
We've got some windshield news follow-up coming up right after we go through the top stories of the day here at 6:18. President Trump's legal team will continue their opening arguments later. The Senate is poised to debate whether to subpoena witnesses on or around Friday. If the vote fails, the Senate could vote to acquit. If senators vote to have witnesses, the trial continues. The New York Times reporting President Trump ordered former National Security Advisor John Bolton to keep military aid to Ukraine frozen in a bid to coerce political favors. And since that news broke, some GOP senators are considering the need to have witnesses at the trial.
Now, page two.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration is giving the maker of Purell products a stern warning. Stop making unproven claims that over-the-counter hand sanitizers help eliminate Ebola, MRSA, or the flu. In a warning letter to Purell's parent, Gojo Industries, the agency called out the company for making numerous marketing claims that potentially position its sanitizing products as a pharmaceutical drug rather than an over-the-counter topical antiseptic. The letter from the agency's director of compliance cited numerous examples of what the FDA says are unproven claims for Purell products made on Gojo.com, Purell.com, and social media accounts for the brand. Products at issue include Purell Advanced Hand Sanitizer, Gentle and Free Foam, Purell Advanced Hand Sanitizer Gel, and Purell Advanced Hand Sanitizer Gel and Free Foam ESX Starter Kit. All those products, according to the FDA, are commonly sold for use in places like athletic facilities, schools, and offices.
Page three.
Nike has suspended the sale of Kobe Bryant merchandise on its online store. Pages on the Nike.com site for Bryant-branded gear only offered gift cards for Los Angeles Lakers gear. All searches for Kobe Bryant-branded shoes led to a generic Nike brand page with no Kobe-related items. Other websites where sneakers can be resold, however, showed increases in prices for gear associated with Kobe. Now, I heard, I don't know, Dave Bennett, if you heard this too, that what's behind this is Nike doesn't want a lot of this resale to get out of hand. So I guess they're making, but I think by suspending the sale, they may be making the situation worse. I mean, they don't want a lot of folks selling the Kobe Bryant merchandise for astronomical amounts of money, and they would like sales to be directed to a charity. I think that's what's going to be going on here.
I get that, and that makes sense. But let's say you have a kid who was a huge Kobe fan and is distraught and devastated by this and wants to get some jersey or some apparel as a way to pay tribute and remember. I mean, I think it's kind of, you know, from that standpoint, it's a little cold.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's great if it goes to charity. You could still work out a way to give proceeds to charity.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
But I mean, you knew this was going to happen with all the Kobe Bryant gear,
speculators,
uniforms.
Yeah.
So we'll follow that Nike story.
Page four.
Bar Louie, the Texas-based gastropub chain founded in Chicago 30 years ago, has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection and closed more than a third of their corporate-owned locations, including several in the Chicago area. Restaurants in Naperville and Chicago's Near North neighborhood, among 38 corporate-owned locations that were closed over the weekend due to accelerating sales declines. The chain, which had grown to 134 locations in 26 states, cites recent expansion, an inconsistent brand experience, and decreased traffic to shopping malls as leading to the declines. Bar Louie started right here in Chicago in 1990.
Stand by for news.
The owner of Baker Square and Village Inn filed for bankruptcy protection as well, closing 33 locations, blaming high wages and growing competition for declining sales and higher operating losses. American Blue Ribbon Holdings does not have any secured debt, according to court documents, but said that a related company would no longer fund the company's losses. American Blue Ribbon filed for bankruptcy to restructure under what they say is a healthy core of restaurants. The company said it is exploring a variety of strategic and structural alternatives to best position the company for success in the future. And Mary over there at the traffic desk was wondering what's going on here with Baker Square, because it seems like there aren't other places like that where you can get those pies.
Right. Maybe they should just stick with the pies, right?
And you know what? That's interesting, because we got a couple of texts to that same point. Why not just reopen and sell pies? Apparently, they're being hurt by Denny's and IHOP, and also growing competition from grocers. Because, you know, you can go have meal at the Mariano's or whatever.
Or a good pie. Or Mariano's
a good pie.
Makes great pies,
Growing competition from newer family dining concepts and ad spending by large family dining concepts, presumably Denny's and IHOP, and growing competition from grocers.
And I have a late-breaking addition to this story, Bob.
Who's closing now?
Already the stores, the Baker Square stores in Lansing and Merrillville have already closed their doors yesterday.
Wow. Yeah, it's tough out there. It is.
Don't it may concern.
Thank you, Paul. Here's our sixth story in the top six at six. Atari-themed gaming hotels. Atari hotels coming to eight cities in the U.S., featuring esports studios, gaming playgrounds, and complimentary breakfasts. The company signed a contract that will see Atari license its name and branding to a real estate developer. They'll build eight hotels across the country. The first location will break ground this year in Phoenix, others in Austin, Chicago, Denver, Las Vegas, San Francisco, San Jose, and Seattle. The Atari Hotel.
Are you going to check into a hotel so you can play Centipede?
Yeah. I don't know if you're going to have a lot of peace and quiet in those hotels.
I think so.
And that's the way it is.
This has been the Top 6 at 6 with Bob Sirach on WGN Radio.
Yeah, thank you. 625, we're hearing from a lot of folks who have experienced what I did yesterday, the cracked windshield. This is Frank in Naperville. Good morning, Frank.
Morning, Bob. It's great to hear you back on the radio again.
Appreciate that. So did you have a little pebble hit the windshield?
Yeah, you know, when you see that little crack, it's one of those things that you have to go to church for the next month on every Sunday because of all the bad things that you say out loud. And I learned that if the crack is less than 6 inches long, they're able to inject a filler so it doesn't spread any longer and you can get by. But Bob, if you intend on keeping the car, you got to think about when you trade that car in or when you sell it to somebody else, they're going to see that and they're just going to shake their head and know that there's a, you know, you're going to devalue the car because of crack. And if you're going to keep it with the changing temperatures in the wintertime, the car is cold, and then you turn on the defroster and the change in temperature, that crack is just going to get bigger.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things, you just got to bite the bullet and get it done.
I know. I have to either get it fixed, or I'm not going to totally ignore it. I either got to get it in to see if they can repair it or replace it. Thank you, Frank. Appreciate that. Here's Scott in Bloomington. What happened to you, Scott?
Well, in my experience, if you don't get that fixed, your repairman already said he may not be able to fix it, correct? So that's going to, the previous call is correct. It's going to start to spread. And what Dave Bennett said, it probably could shatter eventually. And because it will spread and it'll get bigger, the cop will see it and give you a ticket for it. So therefore, it costs you the ticket plus the cost to fix it.
I can get a ticket for driving with a cracked windshield?
Yes, you can.
I didn't know that.
Well, thank you, Scott.
Yep, they can give you. Yep.
Appreciate
Have a good day.
You too. Appreciate the warning. And a number of texts came in too about this at 312-981-7200. Let's see, 630. The sooner you call the glass people, the better chance you won't have to pay for the deductible. If the scratch is smaller than a dollar bill, they usually can fix it. Yeah, I heard that too. 708. Get the window repaired for zero. Yeah, because the insurance company won't charge you the deductible for the repair. If it spreads, then spend the deductible. 815, same thing happened to me. It took months for the chip to start creeping across the windshield. 847, place a piece of tape over the hole to prevent it from spreading. Yeah, I did that. 815, the same place that comes to your house and fills it with a gel will do that, and it turns into glass and will never crack after the gel. 630 mentions satellite. And 260 says, go to a glass specialist and get it fixed. Much cheaper at a glass specialist than your auto repair shop. Well, thank you for all of that. This is the Bob Surratt Auto Fix-It Center. It's 6:29 almost.
I don't remember the gel part. I remember them actually taking the cracked windshield in my driveway, taking the windshield off and putting a new windshield in. I don't. Maybe they do just use some sort of gel.
I've heard of that. I've heard of that. A couple other folks commenting. Somebody said, I drove my car with a sprawling crack across my entire windshield for 2.5 years. I guess never got a ticket. I don't know. Let's see. Now, many comments about insurance. And it does happen so much. As I mentioned, though, when I called, I was connected to a special department just handles this. So it's happened to a lot of folks out there. So be careful out there. That's the moral of the story. You heard about our Wintrust Crosstown Series Arizona Fan Flyaway. This spring, Chicago's hometown baseball rivalry heads to Arizona, and you could win a trip for two to Phoenix, airfare, hotel, tickets to the Wintrust Crosstown Series game March 13th. You can register right now or anytime at WGNradio.com/contests. It's sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank, presenting sponsor of the Wintrust Crosstown Series. 6:39, just finishing up on the windshields. Some very very funny texts. Hey, Bob, for crying out loud, get it fixed. Call and pay the money. You're being a baby over a $250 deductible. And it is Safelite. That's the company we were talking about. Small cracks in a windshield can be repaired. It'll get bigger if you don't. Bob, you worry too much. Call Lou Manfredini, and he'll tell you how to fix it. I was actually thinking about that. And this is my favorite text from the 412 area code. Hey, Bob, remove your windshield and drive like the Flintstones. Well, that's a good idea. It's 6:40 right now. And I don't know if you had a chance to read the Tribune today in the paper, and I think this is online as well. Heidi Stevens wrote a very interesting piece. The headline, Channel Your Grief Over Gianna Bryant and Teammates, How to Help Other Girls Play Basketball. And, you know, we're all struggling with dealing with the Kobe Bryant tragedy. And looking for something to do, some way to help. And I think what Heidi Stevens wrote about today for the Tribune really hits home and is really a great idea. And we'll get her on the phone here momentarily and share this information with you. I think you'll agree this is a good idea, and it can make us all feel better about what happened. Late night shows certainly had a lot of Kobe Bryant material last night, and it was really, really interesting, different, and emotional. Jimmy Fallon and also Jimmy Kimmel. And right after our 7 o'clock news, if you didn't catch any of that, we'll replay some of the highlights for you from those late night shows last night. It's 6:41 right now. And in the weather department, this is crazy. We have standing by. I want you to know that at the first glimmer of sunshine, we are going to play Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles. We do have that standing by. But looking at the forecast, we're not going to play it this morning. Don't think we're going to play it tomorrow. Not Thursday or Friday. And then we're supposed to get a light snow on the weekend. So this is really something. If it seems like you've been down and depressed lately, well, the grayness may have something to do with it. We're in the longest sunless streak since last February. Usually in January, we get sunshine about 42% of the time for the month. We've had it 28%, so it's not just you. I know the experts say to do this, and it does work. I did it yesterday. I just got out of the house and went for a fast walk for about 45 minutes or so. And even though, you know, you're not walking in the sunshine, just getting out and getting some air does help you do that. And I think you're going to have to do that again today, aren't you, Steve? What's the latest weather update?
I've also been trying to find the bright spot in all of this. And if it stays cloudy like the forecast says it does through Sunday, that means it's going to be cloudy for Groundhog Day.
No, that's right.
Which means the little guy won't see his shadow. So that's good news, right?
That's right. The program director doesn't see his shadow. So 6 more months of memos.
Right.
That's what that means. New this morning in the Tribune on their website and in the paper, headline, Channel Your Grief Over Gianna Bryant and Teammate, How to Help Other Girls Play Basketball. Heidi Stevens wrote this piece today that caught our eye. Good morning, Heidi. It's a really great story, and I think if you share this with us, a lot of people are going to want to get in on this. Talk about the genesis of this idea and how you came to write this today.
Good morning, Bob. Thank you for having me on. A friend of mine actually put the idea in my head on Sunday night, you know, as I'm sure you experienced everywhere you looked on social media or anything you listened to was talking about this tragic crash. And a friend of mine posted on my Facebook page, how about a deserving girls basketball team or club where we could send donations in Gigi's name? Gigi is the nickname for Gianna, Kobe Bryant's 13-year-old daughter who was on the helicopter. And I thought, man, what a fabulous idea, because she was really well known for her love of basketball, obviously, and her dreams of playing in the WNBA and going to UConn before she went pro. And so I just started putting out some calls to, you know, different coaches and nonprofits and places that I thought might, offer girls basketball programming. And one of the first people I heard back from was Bill Curry over at Breakthrough Urban Ministries. And they do some great, great, great girls basketball stuff, starting in elementary age, co-ed leagues with girls, and then all the way up until high school, where they really get them in front of college recruiters and college coaches. And Bill Curry's got a ton of connections because, you know, he was a varsity basketball coach for a long time at Westinghouse and lives on the west side. His kids go to Westinghouse. And so I talked to him about, you know, what basketball means for girls and in his experience, how it can be kind of hard to find basketball programs geared toward girls. He made the fantastic point that, you know, basketball is such a huge gift, really, to kids who play. It teaches you how to perform under stress. It teaches you how to elevate yourself and your own skills, even as you focus on the importance of lifting up your team as well. And he talked about how, you know, in his mind, it's such an important life skill that you can't just offer it to the people who are already interested. You really got to market it out to people who don't even really have it on their radar. And so that's what they try to do at Breakthrough. So, it was really kind of an honor to get to talk to him and offer people, you know, a place to maybe channel some of the grief that they're feeling over this crash. You know, Gianna obviously was just one of the teenagers on that helicopter. She was flying with two of her teammates to this tournament. And so, you know, two other 13-year-old basketball players died that day too.
As you write, Breakthrough hosts a co-ed basketball league for elementary age girls at its Westside facility. On Friday nights, the group hosts games for high school age girls to train with local coaches. Breakthrough partners with Full Package Athletics, a suburban-based basketball club, to bring girls from the Westside to play in amateur athletic union games, where college scouts and coaches can see what they're made of. And I know about this a little bit because my daughter played high school basketball and she was involved with Full Package Athletics. And what you say is so true, Heidi, about how much that means to these girls and how it helps them develop much more than just their athletic skills, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you know, Bill Curry talked about how, you know, he tells the girls, you know, he says, I'm coaching future attorneys and CEOs and entrepreneurs, and I tell them, you know, the stress you're dealing with on the basketball court, it's important, but it's fake. It's fake in the sense that, you know, the worst thing that happens is someone steals the ball and runs down the court and scores on you. Mm-hmm. But you're learning to plan for that and perform under that and deal with the aftermath of that, and then you get out in the real world and the stresses that you're going to be dealing with are real and the stakes are higher, but you're trained for it from what you've been learning on the court. And I think that's just such a fantastic point and a fantastic opportunity. And I love that, you know, he finds ways to make sure that that's not just offered to girls whose families have the resources. And so, you know, it just struck me as a really fitting way to respond to this crash. You know, to find ways to maybe open that sport up to other girls around Chicago. And, you know, I didn't just talk to Breakthrough. Well, I did just talk to Breakthrough, but I also mentioned other programs within the column. Girls in the Game is another Chicago-based organization that empowers girls through sports, and they take donations. And, you know, Chicago Sky has a Sky Cares program. And even, honestly, going to, you know, Sky games and women's sporting events can be, like, such a really powerful way of showing support and way of spending time with a girl, too. And I know those aren't always super affordable, but they do tend to be a little more affordable than that.
Right.
Than the men's pro game.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was great to see my daughter and her friends and the girls she played against, how they got better as the years went on. We're talking to Heidi Stevens, who has a piece online and in the Trib today about this. And as you point out in the article, Heidi, Kobe Bryant's daughter was determined to play for the University of Connecticut before mm-hmm. going pro. And then you also write about Bill Curry this summer planning a breakthrough, planning to launch an evening league for high school junior and senior girls to compete against players from nearby women's collegiate basketball programs such as St. Xavier, Roosevelt, Robert Morris, and Olivet Nazarene. So I think what we want to take away from this is how can we help? How can somebody do something? And this is, as you say, this is a great way to channel your grief, do something positive, do something that certainly Kobe Bryant would want done. What's the best road to take here to find out how we can help and who we can help, Heidi?
Well, in the column, if you look at the online version, you know, the names of the organizations are hyperlinked to those organizations' websites. And if they had specific donation sites, I linked to those. And so, you know, I know in the print version, you can't click and link.
Right.
But, you know, if you've got access to a phone or a laptop, you can just Google the names of those organizations. Breakthrough Urban Ministries is the one where, you know, the Bill Curtis leads up the youth programming for. Girls in the Game is another one I mentioned. CPS SCORE is another one that's an acronym for Sports Can Open Roads to Excellence, and that's a no-cut program for 5th through 8th graders at CPS. They take donations. The Sky Cares program through the Chicago Sky takes donations. So I think those are some really worthy outfits. And like I said, if you go to the online version of the column at chicagotribune.com, the sites are actually linked to.
Okay, and then if you go to chicagotribune.com, because most people don't have the good old-fashioned newspaper, as I do, if you go to chicagotribune.com, and is it easy to find that way? Do you have to put your name in there or something?
Don't put my name in there, because our search function's terrible, I'm just going to be honest.
Okay.
you have me on the record as saying our search function's terrible. Under, you know, there's a part on the Tribune homepage called Voices. It's like where all the columnists are. I'm down there. I'm under Voices. I'm there with Rex Hupke and Eric Zorn and Cass and all the rest. So, I'm on there this morning under Voices, and the column is headlined, How to Channel Your Grief Over Gianna Bryant and Her Teammates into Helping Other Girls Play Basketball.
Heidi Stevens, great piece. Thank you for talking with us this morning. And as soon as I get off of here at 9, even though we're not connected anymore, Tribune and WGN. I will walk over to your place and fix the search engine. And,
thank you, Bob.
Yeah, because I only work 4 hours a day. I need other things to do. You know what I mean?
What do you do between your shift and lunch? Come fix our search function.
Well, I got you penciled in for that.
Uh-huh. Perfect.
And then right after that, I ride the CTA with the Guardian Angels. I do what I can around here, as you
okay.
do.
Well, we are grateful for that.
My only regret is that I have but one life to give to my radio station. Heidi Stevens and the Chicago Tribune this morning. Thanks for the time, Heidi. And again, thanks for giving us all some way to channel our grief and do some good, because this thing just still doesn't compute. And every time you think about it, it doesn't make sense. You can't believe it. And it still hurts. So,
yeah, well, I agree.
Appreciate the thoughts. Have a great day.
Thanks, Bob. You too.
It is 6:57, and the news is coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Good morning. It is 10 after 7. Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Kimmel gave emotional tributes to their longtime friend Kobe Bryant last night. Jimmy Kimmel Live, of course, comes from Hollywood, and he had quite a special show last night. There was no guest, right? He just dedicated the whole show to Kobe. He directed viewers who would like to remember him in a philanthropic way to make a donation to KVBFF.org, the Kobe and Vanessa Bryant Foundation. And to start the broadcast, Jimmy was holding back tears, and he remembered Kobe Bryant in a monologue. And here's a little bit of it.
I know he was not a perfect person. I understand that. My intention is not to canonize him or make judgments about things I don't know anything about. But I will say he loved his family. He worked very hard, and he brought a lot of joy to a lot of people in the city, and we're going to miss him. And I hope you will pray for his daughter, Gianna, and for their mother, Vanessa, for the three girls Kobe left behind who lost their father and their sister, and for his friends who were on that flight with him, the Altobelli family, Christina Mauser's family, the Chester family, Ara Zabayan, the pilot. I can't imagine how much they are missed. This was a terrible loss for those families and for the Lakers, for Kobe's teammates, for his fans. It's just, there's no silver lining here. It's all bad. It's all sad. He was a bright light, and that's how I want to remember him. He was on the show 15 times. We had many fun and interesting conversations, and tonight we are going to share some of those to remember him, starting with what turned out to be the last interview I got to do with him from September of last year.
Jimmy Kimmel last night on ABC. No guests, no audience, no band. And over on NBC, Jimmy Fallon also paid tribute to Kobe Bryant, and he told a pretty interesting story, a fun story about Kobe. Apparently, they were out together on a beer run, and they got to a place that would not sell them the beer because it was for delivery only, and it was all locked up. And thanks to Kobe Bryant, though, they were successful. Here's Jimmy Fallon from last night.
Kobe takes out his ID and he puts it up against the glass and he goes, "I'm a Laker." And the guy opened the door and we walked out with five cases of beer and we saved the party. So we saved the party, we said goodnight, and of course Kobe went on to become a legend. 5 NBA titles, 2 Olympic gold medals, 18 All-Star appearances, one of the most brilliant and most respected players in NBA history. And when we'd run into each other over the years, we'd laugh about that night that we first met. We'd laugh at all the good things that had happened since. And we'd laugh about how much fun it was to raise kids and all the stupid mistakes we made trying to figure out how to be good dads. And Kobe had 4 daughters, and I had 2 daughters. And today, he and one of his girls are gone. But I think I knew Kobe enough to know that he rose to any challenge by digging deeper and getting back to work. So let's honor Kobe, Gianna, and the other lives that were lost yesterday by following his example. Love your family, love your teammates, and outwork everyone else in the gym. To Vanessa and all those affected by this tragedy, we love you, and we'll always be there for all of you. Kobe, when we meet again, we're going on a beer run.
Wow. Jimmy Fallon on NBC last night. That's how he opened the Tonight Show, telling the story about the first time he met Kobe. Fallon was just getting started in comedy. Kobe Bryant was a rookie on the Lakers. They apparently met at a party and then went on that beer run together. Successful because Kobe was on the Lakers. For extremely local news, we check in with our Block Club Chicago friends. Good morning, Jen Sabella. How you doing, Jen?
Good morning, Bob. I'm good. How are you?
Doing okay, and anxious to hear what's going on up north with the Uptown Theater. I mean, many of us remember this grand old movie palace. What's the latest on the renovation?
So for years, as you know, there have been stops and starts trying to get this beautiful theater restored, and it's finally happening. Alderman James Kappelman up in the 46th Ward sent an email to constituents this week saying that they're super close to closing the funding gap. They think that they'll get the funding needed for the $75 million overhaul by this spring, and they hope to open in 2022 for their first show. So this is a massive undertaking. It's going to have $40 million from the city and state sources. And then the owners, who Jerry Mickelson, who owns Jam Productions, they've been fundraising. They started their own nonprofit, actually, to fundraise for the theater. And they're really close. I think they had about $20 million to go in November. And apparently they're closing that gap, and they're going to be ready to start construction probably this summer.
And it will be a live concert venue. Is that the plan?
Yes, they're actually going to tear out. This place is enormous. It's bigger than the Chicago Theater and Radio City Music Hall. It has three marquees, 17,000 light bulbs, and seats 4,351. So it's enormous. It was built in 1925. They're planning to tear out the seats in the front to make way for some general admission seating, or general admission for people who want to dance during concerts or stand. They're hoping it becomes a huge draw for the neighborhood. Bruce Springsteen played there, and Bob Marley and the Grateful Dead before it closed in 1981. So it was like already a huge destination in Chicago, and they're hoping to make it that way again.
Yeah, it was a great place to see a concert because it was fairly intimate, and I guess it still will be, won't it?
Exactly, yes. And now you'll be able to stand up toward the front. So if you're seeing someone like, you know, Springsteen, you could rock out a little bit and, you know, to sit down.
And for people who don't know, the Uptown Theater, that's North Broadway, right?
Yes, it's 4816 North Broadway, what is now known as the Uptown Entertainment District, because you have the Riviera Theater right there, the Aragon Theater. There's a lot of different, the Baton, which is a famous drag club that was downtown for years and years, just moved up there. So that Uptown Entertainment District is finally becoming, you know, coming to life.
Great. Okay. So we'll be looking forward to lots of activity up there by late spring. Let's talk a little bit about the city's recycling efforts now. Big problem. What are we doing about it?
Yeah. Shockingly bad. The numbers are abysmal. In the U.S. overall, 35%. The U.S. cities in general have a 35% recycling rate. In the Chicago suburbs in Cook County, there's a 19% recycling rate. And in Chicago, it's 8.8. It is, I think I can say it's pathetic. So I know that we write about recycling a lot at Block Club, and we do a lot of explainers, like this can go into your blue bin, this cannot, and really trying to spread the word about this stuff. But there's still constantly what they call contaminated bins. So people will put trash in the recycling bins, and then the whole thing will get thrown away. And there's really no incentive for people to do it the right way. In other cities, you can get discounts, you can get, like, you know, money essentially for recycling properly. So Mayor Lori Lightfoot has assigned the Department of Streets and Sanitation a study. She wants the department to look at how other cities who are more successful recycling, what they're doing, and they're going to try to implement some of these policies in Chicago to get us at least up to the suburban number of 19%, which is still far below the national recycling rate.
Yeah, I remember when the whole blue bag campaign started, and all you heard and all you saw was the commercials and the announcements about the blue bag. What happened?
At the time, I know the blue bags were mixed in with the trash. A lot of investigations found that they would just be thrown in the landfill, and people would come and try to pull out the blue bags. It was a completely inane process. Yes. So now it's a little better than that, I think, but obviously the numbers, which also could be because people feel so disillusioned with how the city handles recycling.
Right.
And they don't bother to do it.
Let's talk about some food and beverage news. First up on North Rockwell, what's happening there?
So this is a hilarious brewery addition. So this neighborhood, like in North Center, there are so many breweries popping up over there. And there is a man named Brent Roska, who was a pastor at a suburban church and a home brewer. And he decided to hang up his, robe and dedicate his life to brewing beer. So it's called Burning Bush Brewery. So he's got his biblical reference there, reference to Moses in the burning bush. And it opens on Thursday at 4040 North Rockwell. And he has all different kinds of brews that started in his home. And he's really inspired by kind of the classic brewery style of like what monks used to brew. So a lot of like darker beers and porters, really good for a wintry, warming beverage.
And he's a former pastor from North Riverside, isn't he?
Exactly, yes. He was in a church in North Riverside, and he, you know, was doing this on the side, and he just decided to go all in.
Nice. And food halls are constantly in the news. I have not been to the one in Pullman, but you've got a story about a small catering company. And actually, they've had a food truck, too, a lot of people know. And they're going to be in the food hall now in Pullman, 111 Food Hall, right?
Yes, the 111 Food Hall is really unique because the whole point of it is to get these restaurants kind of a jumping off point. So maybe someday they can open their own brick and mortar, but they want to try to help these restaurateurs build an audience and experiment with recipes. So it's kind of the opposite way for Lexington Betty Smokehouse, which is the latest addition to the food hall at 756 East 111th Street. The owner, Dominique Leach, she had started out as a catering company and then started a food truck and then opened a restaurant in Oak Park. And she specializes in barbecue and smoked meats and soul food. And she's doing really well for herself. And she heard from the people from 111 Food Hall in Pullman saying, hey, we need some barbecue in here. So she decided to open a location there. And it might be just the beginning of her expansion plans. She is also looking at Waukegan and Garfield Park for future restaurant locations, but her specialty is smoked meat, and she does a dry rub rib tips, which are unique. Usually you don't use a dry rub on rib tips, and it's very popular. People love it. So she's got the soul food options, cornbread, all the good stuff. You expect yams, candied yams, biscuits, macaroni and cheese, from a good soul food spot. So now the 111 food hall is complete. There's vegan and there's barbecue.
Does the city have a food hall tour yet? Because there's a lot of action in this department.
They really should. There's like a new one opening every week.
Yeah, there is.
So this one's unique because it's on the far south side. Mm-hmm. Most of them are concentrated downtown or in the West Loop. So the Pullman one, I actually haven't been there yet either, and I'm anxious to go check it out. It brings like a lot of options to a neighborhood that doesn't have as many restaurant options. So yeah, it's really exciting for the people in that neighborhood to be able to try all these different.
Sign me up for the tour. Yeah.
I know, same. Yeah. Maybe I'll lead it.
Jen Sabella, Black Club Chicago, with our extremely local news report of the morning. Thanks, Jen. You have a good day.
You too. Thanks, Bob.
7:28 right now. Dave, I have a sports prediction. I know this is your department, but if you'll allow me, this is guaranteed to happen this summer. You ready?
Okay. I was just going quickly back over some of your other predictions, but go ahead, Bob.
Don't remind me of those. Nick Castellanos will have a game-winning hit for the Reds when they play the Cubs at Wrigley Field. This is guaranteed to happen this summer.
Okay, have you got the date yet?
I'm working on the specifics of it, but I am disappointed that the Cubs don't have him, the Sox didn't get him, and he's in the division now in the Central with the Cubs. Playing for the Reds this year.
He is. I was just very quickly looking to see when the Cubs and the Reds play for the first time this year. It looks like it's like around Memorial Day at Wrigley Field.
He'll get a big warm reception, I think.
Last weekend of May.
Okay. Remember, you heard it here first.
We did.
Coming up, a pineapple plant could be the way to stop snoring. Yes, we will. Yes, seriously, we will talk to a sleep expert about that and more right after the news. One of our favorite topics is sleep or the lack of it, and we're joined by Dr. Hal Stewart, sleep expert, CEO of the Stewart Center. Good morning, Doc. How you doing today?
Hey, Bob. I'm doing great. How are you?
Did you get enough sleep last night?
I did. 7 hours, baby.
You're the one. All right, we've been talking about this. Is there anything to this story about pineapple plants preventing snoring? Apparently, according to research by NASA scientists, pineapple plants can help reduce snoring. Explain this.
Well, I would say to your listeners, I wouldn't go out and invest in a pineapple orchard or vineyard, whatever they call them. I have no doubt that this particular pineapple plant, it's a non-edible pineapple plant, so produces fruit about every 2 years. It's non-edible. Does put out more O2 than maybe a normal plant does, but the problem with snoring is it's not a quality of air issue, although good quality air, I'm not saying that that's not important. It is. Snoring is a physiological issue. So here's a great example. If you have a car, brand new Mercedes, and you take the intake manifold, for those that don't know what an intake manifold is, that's where air comes into the engine so the combustion can occur. And if you cover half of that intake manifold up with duct tape or something that keeps the air from flowing in, then you can still drive the car, but over a period of time, it's going to cause bad things to happen. It doesn't matter what kind of fuel you put in the car. You can put the purest, most high-octane fuel in the car. If you don't have the physiological amount of air coming in, it doesn't matter. And snoring is a physiological problem. There's just not enough room, and the tissues then vibrate as the air goes through, and the patients that snore breathe through their mouth. And when you breathe through your mouth, your air quality is not anywhere near as good as it is when you breathe through your nose. So my answer would be maybe I'd have to see the entire study, but I don't see how that could be possible at all. Maybe in zero gravity up in space, maybe it makes a difference. I don't know. But down here on the Earth,
well,
I wouldn't hold my breath.
The NASA scientist said that these pineapple plants can help reduce snoring as they produce oxygen and improve the air quality of a room.
Right.
That was the basis for this study. The plants need carbon dioxide to grow, but they have no use for oxygen. Because of this, the pineapple plant will use the carbon dioxide it breathes in and release pure filtered oxygen back into the room for humans to breathe. It sounds good.
Right. No, it's that's great. It's great to have plants around your house, but again, it's not going to make your throat get bigger and your tissues that are causing the obstruction. It's not going to do anything for that. So, maybe if you put 1,000 people in a room with these pineapples, maybe some would snore less. I don't know. I just don't see the validity in it at all. And it's, I don't want a bunch of people going out buying these pineapple plants thinking that it's going to, because snoring is a serious, a very serious issue. And it's something that's a physiological structural problem within the mouth and the soft palate and throat. And again, using my analogy with the car, it doesn't matter how pure of a fuel you put in the car. If you've taken the oxygen, you know, that's being sucked in to create the combustion, then you cut that in half or 75% or 40%, it's going to have an effect on the car engine. So same thing with your body.
We're talking to Dr. Hal Stewart, sleep expert, CEO of the Stewart Center. Doc, here's what I don't understand. Over the weekend, I was talking to a friend of mine who is a professor of neurocare. He's a neurology guy down in Florida. Mm-hmm. He's talking to me about napping. This is what I do now in my spare time. I do sleep research. Mm-hmm. And we were talking mm-hmm. about napping, and he was saying that the sleep cycle, if you sleep for like an hour and a half, you go through a cycle. We need to go through right. these deep sleep cycles. So does that mean that you need to take a nap that's at least an hour and a half? Because I hear, no, don't take a nap longer than 10 or 20 minutes. But then I was talking to my friend who's this, he's an associate professor of neurology at FSU, mm-hmm. at the College of Medicine there, right. the NeuroCare Institute of Central Florida. And he says, hour and a half sleep cycle, you need that. So what's the deal on mm-hmm. that?
Well, he's right. But we have to put that into context. If you're going, first of all, during the day, if you're getting the proper sleep and the quality of sleep at night, you should not need to take a nap during the day. But if you do, then I agree with that. It needs to be either an hour and a half or it needs to be 10, 15 minutes, one or the other. You don't want to sleep for an hour, 15 minutes, because you get into a stage of sleep where when you come out of it, you haven't completed the cycle. Or a power nap, 10, 15 minutes earlier in the day, is not going to hurt a thing. It can actually refresh you, reduce fatigue, increase your alertness. But if you go through a full cycle, that will do the same thing. But here's the problem. You want to do that. You don't want to do it in 2 or 3 in the afternoon, because then that could very well interrupt your nocturnal sleep pattern that you're supposed to. That's when the true healing power of sleep comes in, during that nocturnal part of sleeping. And so he's right in the sense that, yes, if you're going to take a nap, it either needs to be very short, 10, 15 minutes, or you really need to go through the full cycle if you can't. If you do go through the full cycle, though, it needs to be earlier in the day, not in the late afternoon, because then that will affect your sleep cycle during the evening. It very well could.
Yeah, but we're all different, right? Like I could take a nap after dinner and then go right to sleep a few hours later. So it's an individual assessment, isn't it?
Well, it is to an extent, but when people sleep, they don't really, you can sleep without getting the quality sleep that you need. That's why a lot of people that have obstructive sleep apnea, a lot of my patients say, well, I sleep through the night, but then when we do a sleep study, we see that they're stopping breathing for more than 10 seconds, 15, 20, 30 times a night. But they're still sleeping through the night. Yeah. Now, not everybody does that has sleep apnea. Many are up and down, up and down, up and down. But so sleep, just sleeping and, you know, for 6-7 hours and then waking up, you should wake up refreshed. You should stay, you know, high energy, well, not high energy, but normal energy throughout the day. And then going into the evening, things start slowing down and you fall asleep at night. Now, a lot of this is affected by, you know, exercise and diet as well. So it's a multifactorial thing. It's not just, you know, if you take a nap, that's going to solve. If you take an hour and a half nap every day, that's going to solve your, you know, your issues, because, you know, it's multifactorial. But all said and done, you want 7 to 8 hours of sleep. This is on average. There are individual exceptions. That's why it's important to, you know, to see I work with a sleep neurologist in Houston, Dr. Jerry Simmons. I'm, you know, 4 hours from Houston, but we do telemed conferences. I send my patients there for their sleep studies. It's up to that individual, that neurologist to analyze a sleep study, and then for that particular patient, decide what's best for them. But so we're talking in generalities here.
Right. We're talking to Dr. Hal Stewart, sleep expert at 751 right now. Is it true that all of the problems that sleep deprivation can cause, including we're hearing more and more about dementia being linked to lack of sleep, exercise, can that really counter the harm we do to our bodies by not sleeping as much as we should?
No, there's really nothing that you can do to make up for lack of sleep, because that's the only time our bodies heal. That's the only time our brain reboots. That's the only time we get that our cells and our muscles and our tissues actually heal and refresh. And that only comes with a sleep cycle where you're going through the full 90-minute sleep cycle, you know, three times a night. Basically, that's about the average, 3-4 times a night. That's when you get that nourishing sleep, and you can't make that up for that with anything else. And yes, there are some very strong studies out that are linking dementia with sleep deprivation.
Can I get into one of these sleep studies? Because this is the perfect job for me. Pay me to sleep. Do you need somebody like me, Doc?
Absolutely. Well, it would save your, possibly, you know, add a lot of quality to your life and, you know, 10 or 15 more years to it.
Yeah.
Possibly.
We have, now, as you might expect, everybody who works on the morning show is very interested in this topic. So let me throw it open to our sports department, the newsroom, and the traffic center. Go ahead, folks. Who wants to go first here?
Just a commentary. I had a sleep study, and Bob, I'm not sure you want to do it. They wire you up, but Doctor, I went home and I told my wife I didn't sleep a wink, but they had evidence that I had been sleeping, and that's also when I was diagnosed with apnea, because they plotted the number of times, or they could count the number of times per minute that I stopped breathing while I was sleeping. So I think it kind of underscores what you just said. It has added, hopefully, years to my life, but also quality to my sleep.
Doc?
Yeah, well, I'm assuming they put you on a CPAP or some device to...
No, I have a mouth guard, like an oral appliance. Yeah.
So just as people can have, they can stop breathing 25, 30, 40 times a night for 10 seconds or more and still sleep through the night, thinking they've slept well, you also can actually go through these sleep cycles and not feel like you slept well. Just like that's very common to hear that for people that have sleep studies. I didn't sleep a wink. Well, all they need to see is a couple of cycles, and they can know, you know, that gives a very good broad overview of what you're doing every night. So the sleep studies, these technicians are trained to know, and the neurologists, and I mean, I can read a sleep study too, but as a dentist, at least in the state of Texas, the final actual medical diagnosis needs to come from a neurologist. So we share the sleep studies and we both look at them, but you can tell if a sleep study is not good. If you've got a good lab technician and a good neurologist looking at it, they will know that the sleep study is not the data, and it's not good, and they can then, you know, do another one. But for the most part, you get a couple of cycles, that's a very good indication of what's happening. Every single night.
Mr. Grzanich in the newsroom, you're next.
Doc, I have, like a lot of people, the Fitbit, and I'm fascinated by the data that it is collecting on me, but specifically the sleep data that says that I'm, according to this, I'm getting pretty good sleep at night, not waking up very much, only having a couple of instances where I'm jostled awake for whatever reason. How reliable is the Fitbit when it looks at your sleep?
Not at all. The only way, even a home sleep study, like I prescribe home sleep studies to my patients. I use that as a screening tool. Then I send that to my neurologist, and then they get the patient in for a full sleep study. It depends on the severity, but the things like the Fitbits, they don't measure brain activity. They don't measure the inspiratory rate or the thoracic pressure. All of those things. This is not just about oxygen. There's a lot of other issues. The reason most people, or a lot of people with sleep apnea, have heart attacks during the night, it's not because their hearts are deprived of oxygen. It's because their hearts are having to work so hard because of the thoracic pressure, that the negative pressure that builds up in the chest when the patient goes into those obstructive sleep apnea events. And they can still be oxygen, you know, having enough oxygen, 90% or more, but their thoracic pressure goes up so much that the heart just can't keep up with it. And that's why so many heart attacks occur between the hours of 1 and 6 o'clock in the morning. So, the danger with a Fitbit and all that's good, but it's not by any measure, a diagnostic tool. So if you're having daytime sleepiness, fogginess, hard to concentrate, if you're ADD, ADHD, if you're getting up and using the bathroom a lot during the night, things like that, those are indications that there is an issue. And at the very least, go to your physician or a sleep dentist and get a home sleep study. That is much more accurate than your Fitbit.
Hey, Steve, wake up, because the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Thank you very much, Doc. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. You guys have a great day.
Happy sleeping. It's Dr. Hal Stewart. It is 8:09. Listen carefully as our menu options have changed. Press 1 if you'd like the entertainment report from Dean Richards. Hi, Dean.
Good morning, Bob. Everybody press 1.
Yeah, everybody has pressed 1. Well, last night, we were talking about this earlier, Fallon and Kimmel really got emotional about Kobe Bryant. I guess Kobe was on Kimmel like 15 times.
Right.
And so Jimmy Kimmel did his show with no guests, no audience, right?
Yeah, he just did his show without an audience, extremely emotional, breaking down, in near tears more than once. Jimmy Fallon, same thing, talking, telling stories. He talked about a story in which Kobe Bryant was just a rookie with the Lakers. He was 17 years old. Jimmy Fallon was 21. He was an up-and-coming stand-up comedian. They met at a party. And they just got to talking, and the whoever was throwing the party said, need somebody to go on a beer run. So Kobe and Jimmy Fallon went on the beer run together. They go to what they thought was a 7-Eleven. It wasn't. It was a store that only did deliveries. And they go to the store, and the guy, you know, behind the glass, the locked door, saying, we only do deliveries. You can't just walk in here and buy beer. And, you know, they're pleading with him, come on, please. And then finally, Kobe holds up his Lakers ID on the window, and the guy unlocks the door. They buy 5 cases of beer and, walk off, and they save the party that they were at, interestingly, at 17 years old, buying beer. Conan O'Brien was great last night and very profound. James Corden was very profound. All the late-night hosts last night. Remembering Kobe Bryant, because he was a very frequent guest on all of their shows, being set in Los Angeles, and he was a great guest on all of their shows. He was always funny. He brought it. He's like sort of the ideal guest that you hope for in any kind of interview situation. We've got just a little bit of a clip here that shows both the emotion and the comedy of what went on late night last night.
There's no silver lining here. It's all bad. It's all sad. He was a bright light, and that's how I want to remember him. He was on the show 15 times. We had many fun and interesting conversations, and tonight we are going to share some of those to remember him.
Kobe had 4 daughters, and I had 2 daughters. And today, he and one of his girls are gone. But I think I knew Kobe enough to know that he rose to any challenge by digging deeper and getting back to work. So let's honor Kobe, Gianna, and the other lives that were lost yesterday by following his example.
Whenever he was on our show, he was a joy to talk with, and he always had the audience in the palm of his hand. That's the guy that I've been thinking about these past 24 hours. I don't know if it's true that Phil Jackson lights up branches of sage and walks around with like a burning sage branch to spread the fumes around the locker room. Is that true, first of all?
Well, first of all, we don't know if it's actually sage.
Yeah.
That's Conan with Kobe Bryant. Yeah,
that's great. I mean, there are clips all over the place. You can find them on the web. Of really, the host ran great conversations, interesting conversations, hilarious conversations, just showing why everybody is in such shock that somebody so talented and so charismatic was taken at such a young age.
Dean Richards has some concert news for us. Who's coming to town, Dean?
Well, we've got some great hair bands of the 1990s.
Oh, good.
That are coming to town. I especially these days appreciate a good hair band more than ever. And I'm thinking of actually starting a no hair band for the year 2020.
Why not?
Yeah, we've got Sammy Hagar, who's going to be coming to town with Whitesnake and also Night Ranger.
Wow.
That's a good triple bill, I think.
You know, I always liked the Whitesnake records. I recently came across that old video they did with Tawny Catane on hood of a car. I enjoy that one. And Sammy Hagar, I remember quite a while ago interviewing him. He became quite the businessman. A very smart guy, Sammy Hagar.
Yeah, a lot of these longtime rock and rollers, you don't survive that long without knowing what you're doing with your money. Anyway, they're all going to be coming to the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater in Tinley Park on Friday, August the 14th, and tickets for that are going to go on sale this coming Friday morning at 10 o'clock. And a lot of Chicago fans know the group called Disturbed. They are celebrating their 20th anniversary with a new tour. This will also be at the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater in Tinley Park. It's going to be on August 20th, and again, tickets for that one are going to go on sale this coming Friday morning at 10 o'clock.
Dean, talk about this Oscar luncheon that took place yesterday. Do they hand out awards that are not televised? What goes on at this thing?
Merely, it's a social gathering, so the people can kind of meet the other nominees. It's an opportunity for the Academy to have all the nominees in one room and tell them, keep your speeches short, don't be political, all the things that they would like them to do during the show, which I would say 95% of the nominees completely ignore on Oscar night and just do whatever they want to do anyway. It's an opportunity to do what they call the class photo of the year. They get all of the nominees. And there are probably about 100 of them or so from, the top categories of Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Actress. Joaquin Phoenix was there. Renee Zellweger was there. Robert De Niro was there. Kathy Bates was there. Leonardo DiCaprio. Brad Pitt. You get all these people in one room. That's kind of a big deal at a hotel in Los Angeles. And they have a nice luncheon. It was a vegan, vegetable-based luncheon, by the way.
Of course.
That's the new trend now. Mm-hmm. If there's any event in Hollywood, it has to be a vegetable-based kind of lunch. I wish they would just serve White Castles. Wouldn't that be great?
I'm sure a lot of the people attending would rather have that.
Yeah, you're sitting there at this fancy occasion with the cream of Hollywood, and suddenly you smell the sliders. The sliders have entered the building.
Every year we hear about how they want to streamline the Academy Awards, make the Oscars shorter, but I've said this many, many times, we watch for the rambling, incoherent speeches. So right. I would get everybody together and say, look, we want your speeches to be long, go as long as you want,
right,
be political, and have a couple of cocktails, and then go up there. Now, that would be a great show.
That would make it.
That's what we really want.
That would make it a fantastic award show. I couldn't agree with you more. It's going to be hostless again this year, so they are going to try to speed it up a little bit. But the only reason to watch those shows are for the unexpected moments.
Yeah.
Nobody wants the, you know, like the perfectly scripted stuff.
No.
They want to see crazy stuff happen.
We don't want streamlined.
They also had a moment of silence yesterday at the luncheon for Kobe Bryant, who was at the luncheon 2 years ago. Hmm. He was nominated and actually did win an Academy Award for Best Documentary Short. For a little film that he was producing, and there was a Kobe Bryant moment as part of it all, and I'm sure that Kobe will be certainly remembered at the Academy Awards as well,
right? And at the Super Bowl, and it's starting to be that time of year where we hear about the commercials.
Yeah, isn't it crazy that the Super Bowl is this Sunday, and then the Oscars are the following Sunday, a week from Sunday, so everything's happening pretty much at the same time this year. We know that J-Lo and Shakira are going to be doing the halftime show this year. We know that there will be some football played that day, but for most people, they want snacks, they want appetizers, and eat large amounts of bad things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing that not a lot of vegetable-based things will be eaten for the Super Bowl at most people's parties this weekend, but the commercials, you know, used to be that you had to wait until Super Bowl Sunday and to see the funny commercials. But now a lot of the companies are releasing the commercials early, and they're all over the web. You can take a look. Hyundai has a very funny commercial with Chris Evans, Captain America, with Rachel Dratch and John Krasinski, all in very heavy Boston accents. For a car company that has a self-parking feature on the car, you click something, and if you're in one of those tight spots, and if you're not good at parallel parking, I guess the car parks for you, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But the commercial is about that. Budweiser's got a bunch of commercials that they've already pre-released. So, you know, a lot of you like to wait until Super Bowl Sunday. You don't want to see anything ahead of time, but if some of you do, all you have to do is type in, you know, Super Bowl 2020 commercials, and you'll get all kinds of them that'll pop up.
Did you see the rates? 1 30-second spot, $5 million.
Isn't
but these people get their spot played before, after we talk about them. So I guess they get their money's worth.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that that's how much it costs for a 60-second commercial on Bob's show.
That's the rate. That's exactly
that's what
right.
It is. You want to be on the big show? You got to pay money for it.
And then for that money, you also own the building here and have the radio station.
Right.
It's all yours.
Yeah, exactly. That's just for buying the commercial, by the way. That's not for the making of the commercial.
No, right.
You know, for example, this car commercial that I was talking about, it's got Captain America, Chris Evans, Rachel Dratch, John Krasinski in it. You got to pay all them. You know, this is the making of the commercial is easily $1 million, if not more. And then when you actually want to buy 1 30-second commercial on the Super Bowl, that's another $5 million, which, you know, brings me to my big Super Bowl commercial story of the year. I'm sitting at my desk here and the phone rings. It's the good people over at Victory Auto Wreckers. For which, you know, I've been the voice of the Victory Auto Wreckers commercial since 1991. You know, with the guy that opens the door and the door falls off, that old car may be worth money. That commercial, it's not going to be on nationally. Victory Auto Wreckers, I assume, did not pay $5 million to have my stupid commercial run. But so it's going to run locally. It's only going to be in Chicago. But they called me and said, hey, I thought you might want to know that your Victory Auto Wreckers commercial is going to be on the Super Bowl.
How about
so
that?
I'm super excited about that.
Is that the Eddie and Jobo thing?
No, this is the it's not the original anymore because they've changed the commercial a little bit. But it's basically that guy from the 1970s. Where he opens the car door, the door falls off, the tow truck comes, takes the car away.
And your voice.
And it's my voice. So, you know, I can say that I've been on the Super Bowl starting after Sunday.
The average cost of a 30-second commercial during the Super Bowl one, $37,500.
Wow.
And now it's, what did I say, for 30
5 million.
Seconds? 5 million.
5 million bucks.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
And $6 million for Victory Auto Wreckers.
That's just what I got.
And finally, we have a Wayne Newton item for
yes.
you.
Yes. You know, people say to me all the time, Dean, I love your entertainment segments. You don't talk about Wayne Newton as much as you ought to. Where's the Duncashane news that we love to hear every day? So I've got a story for you today that Wayne Newton and his wife are going to court. Apparently, some of the items in their home were sold to a company back in 2010, but they want to get their stuff back from it. So they're going to court. The museum closed. They want to get their stuff back now. And the Newtons are claiming that there are a number of personal items, but there are also horses, swans, and wallabies that were theirs that they would like to get their... Well, who wouldn't want to get their wallaby back, really?
Uh-huh. Yeah, all right.
Wallaby going to be okay, Uncle Larry?
Well, is Wayne Newton still performing anywhere in Las Vegas?
I don't know. Have you ever seen Wayne Newton perform?
No. I interviewed him once. I don't know if you ever interviewed Wayne Newton, but he's... he can be a little strange. He's had a lot of problems, legal issues over the years.
He has. He has had that. And we've had him here on the TV morning show once. And it was like a Fellini movie being around Wayne Newton. He's his own life force. He, he moves and says as he pleases. So that was a trip. I went to one of his shows years ago, just for kicks, really. I wanted to see Wayne Newton in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
I went, and his voice was good. I have never seen so much full-on lip kissing in my life in one place. He would, you know, sing a little, and then just sloppy kisses for everyone who came up near the stage. And there were plenty of people coming up to get their chair.
Get a kiss from Wayne.
Yeah. Sorry I didn't know. I have a much better story to tell.
Well, you know what? Had he known you were the voice of Victory Auto Wreckers.
Well, that's true. That does open a lot of doors for me.
Been a lot
that
of personal
old car
contact.
Might be worth money. That's right. You got it, baby. That's going to be the first line of my obituary, by the way. The way people are remembering Kobe Bryant now, people are going to go, yeah, boy, when he did the Victory Auto Wreckers commercial, he put such life into it. Apparently, he is still doing shows. He's got shows in Vegas. Yeah, all in Vegas.
Man,
in fact, he's playing at in Vegas tonight.
Really? Well, you remember when he first was on like the Ed Sullivan Show? He was just a teenager, I think,
little
wasn't
kid.
He?
Yeah, he was a little kid. He was literally singing Duncashane.
Yeah, there's your Wayne Newton update from the plant-based Dean Richards, and we appreciate the entertainment news as always.
All right,
Dean.
See you tomorrow.
You have a good day.
And you might get cash on the spot.
We will check in with our pal Scott Kleinberg and get some social media news and find out how you or your business, whatever the case may be, could get more bang for your buck. That's coming up right after the news. And let's check in with our pal Scott Kleinberg, social media and engagement manager at Investment News. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Bob. How are you doing?
Doing good. Anxious good. To find out how we can get the most out of social media, whether you do this for your brand, your business. Everybody's on social media. How do you get the most bang for your buck?
Well, I'll tell you what, it can be like a vacuum. You know, you talk, but you don't hear anything back. And people are, you know, wondering, why aren't they listening to what I have to say? And I think it's one of those things where I'll say this. I've been doing this for about 12 years, and it always comes up in one form or another. And it's mostly because people get really impatient. It's, you know, it's like, I waited a week, I waited two, I don't have a following, what's going on? So you really have to think of it in terms of a marathon and not a sprint. And there are a couple of good ways to make sure that you do that right off the bat. Number one is you have to know your audience. one of the things that people make the mistake of doing is they just sit down, they pick a social platform, and they say, this is where I'm going to be. And the problem with doing that is that you don't know where your audience is until you actually do some research into that. And the other thing is what I alluded to earlier, and it's patience. I tell you, if I had a nickel for every time someone said this isn't working, it's been a week and it's not doing what it's supposed to do, I'd have so many nickels, because I have to tell people, you know, you just have to sit tight and wait.
Yeah, everybody wants their video or comment or picture, whatever it is, to go viral, don't they?
Yes, they do. And I'll tell you what, I have had editors come up to me and say, hey, Scott, good morning, make this go viral. And I'll tell you what, if I could do that, there's just no way to do that. The way that things go viral is exactly what we're talking about before. You have to strike where the iron is hot. You have to find what people are talking about. You have to know what people are talking about. And then you have to create something that resonates with people, makes them want to share. One person shares, next person shares. All of a sudden, you have this wonderful domino effect, and it goes viral. But you can't, just like you can't just pick a platform out of midair, you also can't just pick something to go viral. You have to figure out what your audience wants to see.
How can you check on your social media and find out how you're doing? Are there ways to do that?
There are several ways to do that. One of the ways, I mean, there's a lot of free analytical tools out there that you can use. So, for example, if you are on Twitter and you're signed into your Twitter account, you go to analytics.twitter.com, you will see a whole new world of how your tweets are doing. A lot of people don't even know that exists. And that can show you all kinds of things, how many likes a tweet has, how many shares it has, what type of reach in terms of demographics it has. So that kind of thing is really important. And also something a lot simpler, just search for a hashtag. And that's one of the things you have to do when you're using social media if you want to be able to track it, is you need to use some type of hashtag. And if you're doing that and you search it, it's very easy to see whether or not your stuff is taking hold or whether someone else's stuff is taking hold. And then that's how you adjust from there.
I found myself in a lampshade store the other day with my wife. It made me very sleepy, but the people were very nice. A place called The Lampshader, and they're in Glenview. And so they were talking about how they're not really that active yet on social media. But they're, you know, if you Google lampshades, I guess they show up high in the search. So is that good enough for a business? Do you need more?
It depends on the business. A lot of businesses, don't get me wrong, a lot of businesses are very happy being high up in Google search, and you should be. But then if you're anything like me, it's always, what more can I do? Now, you use the example of a lampshade store. If I have a lampshade store, I'm sure I have a lot of really photogenic things that I can, you know, that I can take photos of, lots of colorful things. Those types of things I would think would do very well on social media. And, you know, just thinking off the top of my head, it's rare to see people selling lamps on social media. So if you become one of the first stores to really make a niche out of that, well, I mean, you can do some really great things from there. So I think it could be enough, but at this day and age, I think it's better to play it safe and do well on search, do well on social.
Scott Kleinberg is social media and engagement manager at Investment News. He gives us a weekly social media lesson. So Scott, let's talk a little bit more about the hashtag. So the more common the hashtag, the more noise, the less common, the harder it is to get people to find it. So what are you supposed to do?
I think the answer to that is to find a happy medium somewhere. The best way to do it, I mean, it depends on the subject that you're talking about, and it depends on the platform you're on. For example, if you're on Twitter, you don't want to use more than two hashtags if you can help it, because anything more is considered just too much and seems like you're trying too hard. On Instagram, they allow up to 30. You'll see a lot of people using 30. I never recommend 30. I recommend 5. So it really depends on where you are. So if you're using Twitter as the example, you can use hashtag Chicago, and then you can come up with a hashtag that's what you're using for your own stuff. But what you want to do is you want to be very, very careful in thinking of what you want that other hashtag to be. The Chicago part is easy. People searching Chicago will find it. But the other stuff that you're talking about, if you have a specific project you're trying to do, or if you have a specific message you're trying to get across, it really pays not to sit down and just say, oh, this hashtag sounds great. You should type it in, search for it, find out if anybody else is using it before you try to, and then go from there and try to come up with something in between.
And you say we should look at what's trending near where we live, right?
Yes. Yes. If you search for a hashtag, especially on Twitter or Instagram, you can tailor it to where your local area is. So mine right now, it's in New York, but I also have a tab set up where I keep tabs on what's trending in Chicago. You can also have hashtags trend based on your followers and based on how your actual social media is used, but I don't recommend that. I mean, it's good to look at, but I really recommend looking at in terms of geographic location, because that's where most of your searching comes from.
And finally, tell your little hashtag success story, Scott, because we can learn from this.
Oh, my hashtag success story. Yeah. So way back in 2012, when I was working at the Tribune, I created this hashtag called Instagram312. And my goal in doing it was to look for photographers in Chicago that can help participate in a project where we could post the best Chicago photos. And after a while, it started to really gain traction. And I thought to myself, you know what? This is something that could last forever. This doesn't have to just be a Tribune project. So that's 12. I checked yesterday, because I check every week, and it's been almost 8 years now, and there are 136,000 posts on that hashtag. And most people don't know this story, but they know that Instagram 312 is this hashtag that you go to post these great Chicago photos. That is the perfect example of what you want your hashtag to be. You want it to blur the line between your project and what everybody else views as the place to be. And once you have that, I mean, I don't know how far it's going to go, but I have no reason to believe that it's going to stop here.
Aren't you clever? It's good we have you on the right side of the law, Scott. I'll tell you that. It's Scott Kleinberg, who used to write the column for the Tribune and was nationally syndicated, So Social. And we miss that column, Scott.
Oh, thank you. I miss writing it. I really do. But I really enjoy talking to you and your listeners, so I appreciate that.
Well, we'll look forward to catching up with you again next week. You have a good day.
You do the same, Bob. Thank you.
All right. It's 8:51 right now. I have a question here. I picked up some yogurt, and I take a yogurt to work usually, put it in the refrigerator here, or as I like to call it, just to aggravate people in my house, the ice box. And and I'm opening this yogurt, and how do you know when yogurt is not good? Should it look like cottage cheese? Does that mean it's bad, it's gone bad, or does that just mean it needs to be mixed up?
Did you check the date?
Yeah, this is a sell-by date, I guess. Well, it was on sale. It was one of those only 89 cents special deal today, and I figured, they're trying to move it. But I looked at the date. The sell-by date was today. It was January 28th. So it should be good.
Should be good.
Let's mix it up a little bit and see what it looks
like. Should it look like this?
Take a look at it.
If I hold it up to
a lot of
people,
well,
a lot of people watch the show and listen to it. If you go to WGNRadio.com, you can also see us, which is why I take many, many walks to get out of the range of the camera. But is that webcam over? Which is the one that's on me? Is it that one over there to my left here?
No, if you look straight ahead.
Oh, this one up here.
There you go. That's
okay. Because I was trying to figure out how people could see the yogurt. But Dave, you want to look at that? What does it look like? I did mix it up a little bit.
Did you give it a smell? What does it smell like?
The smell test is what you want, right? Mm-hmm. What do you think? Yeah. Huh?
Also a color test. Is it gray or is it white?
It's white. No, Dave says it's fine.
Okay. Take a bite, Dave. Tell Dave to take a bite.
Listen, just the fact that you found it in, as you call it, the ice box here is a victory, because generally you put stuff in there and it's gone.
Well, I put it in this morning.
That's not a guarantee, Bob.
Well, they cleaned out the refrigerator yesterday. Yeah, a little bit. It looks a little better.
There's a sign on the fridge.
Yeah.
There's a sign on the fridge in big block letters. Stuff in here is gross.
Yeah, there's something decomposing in that ice box, and that may be impacting your yogurt.
You know, one of the things I was very impressed with when I came back here was the new facilities here and the kitchen. And the kitchen looked very clean for a broadcast facility, I must say. You know, usually you get to a radio or TV station, the kitchen's don't look that nice. You know what I mean?
No, I think people have really taken care of this place. I mean, they've taken some pride in it. They haven't trashed it. But the refrigerator, the inside of the refrigerator is a different story.
Higher praise you're not going to get. They haven't trashed it yet. Yeah. Let's see. I'm looking at these texts here. By the way, our phone number and our text number is the same here. It's 312-981-7200 from 224. Mama always said, when in doubt, throw it out. Yeah, I say that, too. I use that all the time. You know, my kids growing up would drive me crazy because, and I think I have my wife to thank for this, but they were so focused on whether food was spoiled or not. They'd be throwing away all sorts of stuff from the refrigerator and I really used to get angry because I wanted that food. But they would look at these dates on food. And when you see a date like I see on this yogurt, 128.20, it doesn't mean it's no good after that date. It's a sell-by date, isn't it?
Yes.
I hope.
Yeah, yeah, no, it is. It is. So you should have a grace period.
Although, even that is in question, though, because it will say use by or sell by.
Right.
And if it doesn't say either of those things, then I would be very, very cautious.
Sometimes it says good before.
Yeah, that's another one.
I just ate some ground beef yesterday that's in my freezer from April of 19 last year. Do you think I'm alive?
Yeah, you know, I think they're very conservative in those dates.
Yeah.
I mean, they give you a lot of leeway. Well, the label that caught my eye on this yogurt, and this is why I bought it, it says here, a big red label, woohoo, great deal, 89 cents. So that's all I needed to see. It's 8:55. We'll talk to John Williams in a minute, and also we'll get the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. January 28th, it's kind of a sad anniversary. Anybody remember what happened on this date?
Today's the day the Challenger exploded, isn't
That's
it?
Yeah, 34 years ago today, January 28th, 1986, would that be?
It was 86 because it was, 2 days after the Bears had won the Super Bowl.
That's right.
I remember I was going back to Midway Airport to pick my car up when it happened.
People remember where they were when they heard the news. Yeah. I've got the creepiest story about this because I was working for CBS at the time. We were working on the magazine West 57th, and I was in Colma, California, doing a story about a town where the town is made up of just graves because they couldn't bury people in San Francisco, so they had to go north of the city. And Colma was a town just made up of a cemetery, of one large cemetery. And we were doing a story talking to the mayor of Colma, California, about this odd place. And we were actually, I kid you not, we were in the crematorium area. And then one of the guys on the CBS crew said, hey, I just heard about the Challenger. So needless to say, I will never forget where I was when I heard that news. I mean, it's a date that we all remember, sadly enough. And Krista McAuliffe, of course, comes to mind. And on we go, though. 34 years ago today. Here's John Williams. Hi, John.
Just walked into the studio. 34 years ago today was the
Challenger.
Wow. 34 years ago Sunday was the Super Bowl for the Bears.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Many anniversaries. Some happy, some sad.
Yesterday was the anniversary of the 1967 blizzard. Sunday and Monday was the anniversary of the blizzard that hit Chicago.
The great blizzard.
23 inches of snow on all of us.
That's right. Not to be confused with the blizzard of 79, which was puny by comparison, I can tell you.
It's National Plan a Vacation Day. So a friend of mine's a travel agent. The five top destinations. What are the hottest places to go, the most popular places, the best deals? We'll give you some getaway news in the 10 o'clock hour.
We need that.
Amen.
Hopefully some of those places have the sun.
Actually, Chicago's a great place to be. I love being here. But if you want to get away, we'll tell you where to go.
Look, if the weather was nice here, too many people would live here. We'll be listening to John Williams. You have a nice day. Thank you, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.